Learn How to Love, that was called, and it was the Tedeschi Trucks Band, and it's my very great pleasure to welcome to the music show Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks. Thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This CD, you know, it's called Revelator, and that word is immediately sort of takes you into the middle of the 20th century, into the deep south, into the heart of blues culture and Blind Willie Johnson and Son House. And is that the idea?
Yeah, that's where we live, and that's that's what it feels like. You know, we're down in Jacksonville, and our studio is on the edge of a swamp, and that's the music we go to for inspiration, and it felt appropriate.
And it's something that you feel a direct link with, is it, as well?
In a way, you know, I feel like I feel like that music is still living and breathing, and there's still people out there doing it. And I feel like in our small way, we're trying to bring that to people, trying to keep it around. I mean, the music itself will keep itself around, but it's nice to point people in that direction occasionally.
Yes, yes. The blues is really, Derek, your background, isn't it? I mean, that's you grew up playing blues guitar.
That was certainly the start, you know. Listening to Elmore James and Duane Allman were the first two influences, and then digging back further, where you end up at Blind Willie and Son House and Booker White and all of that music. But then, you know, took a few turns along the way. There was a long period where really avoided listening to guitar players, and it was a lot of Indian classical and Pakistani music, a lot of straight ahead, a lot of Blue Note records and Impulse records, a lot of John Coltrane and Sun Ra and whatever. But you know, me and Susan have similar backgrounds as far as the first music we really dug into.
Yes, yes. But that's interesting that you broadened it in the way that you just described. Is that all there, do you think, when you play? Is Coltrane there? Is Pakistani music somehow lurking behind what you do today?
It all sneaks out. There's it goes atonal occasionally, and it goes microtonal occasionally. So just enough to keep it unique.
Yeah, yeah. And Clapton was important to you as well, and still is, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, my parents kind of named me after that Derek and the Dominoes record, so that's always been around. So my father is a roofer in Jacksonville, Florida, and when I did the Clapton gig, the family came over for the London shows, and watching my dad sip tea with Clapton was a pretty surreal moment. Never saw that one coming.
I'm sure. And there's a great repository of information there, isn't there, in not just with Clapton, but actually with that generation of British blues musicians. In a sense, they kind of, just for a little while, carried the tradition, didn't they?
Absolutely, and I've noticed that being around him and a few other guys from that generation, that they were students of that music. I mean, they knew the... They knew some really obscure music. You know, I think they were huge collectors of the early blues stuff and really the stuff from the Deep South in the United States. So, you know, I learned about some musicians that lived right up the road from me from those guys. a long way around the world to get the info, but it's good to have it.
The other significant name, I mean, you've already mentioned Duane Allman, but the Allman brothers, your uncle is Butch Trux, the Allman Brothers drummer. So that's, I guess that was unavoidable, that particular connection.
Yeah, it was always there, and that music was always there, and the stories, you know, my dad going up to, going AWOL from high school and going up and seeing the Fillmore East shows, you know, that stuff was kind of mythology in my house, at least for me. So it was eventually playing... and that band was still doing it, but it was certainly unexpected.
And does that affect? I mean, in a sense, is that sound partly behind your band now with Susan?
Absolutely. I think me and Susan both, we try not to to hide our roots and hide the music that influences us and inspires us. I think there's occasionally there's this trend to, you see musicians come along and they seem to pretend that they reinvented this music, and I think our take is entirely different. It's you point to your influences and you move forward at the same time, but you want people to know where it came from. I think that's part of the evolution of it and the education of, you know, hopefully another crop of musicians. There's far too few people that actually take the time to learn to play their instrument or learn to sing or learn their craft. And I think we're pretty heavy proponents of that. Like, you have to pay your dues. I mean, we started young, but there's no shortcut. You got to get out there and just hammer the pavement. Just, you got to get out there and tour and sing and play every day. It's really the only way.
Susan Tedeschi, maybe I can bring you in here. Let's talk about your beginnings and your influences. I mean, blues again, but maybe a wider set of influences, country music and classical roots in your case.
Just all over the board. You know, my parents were big fans of music as well. My father played harmonica and acoustic guitar and sang, and he turned me on to everybody from Lightnin' Hopkins and the Staple Singers to Bob Dylan and Buddy Holly. So, and my mom, you know, she was into Hank Williams Sr. and James Brown and Sam Cooke. So, from a really young age, I started doing, you know, acting and musical theater. Was on stage at age 6, and did that as well as, you know, being rock bands and everything else, you know, as a teenager. And then went to college for music. I played clarinet and piano and guitar later on in life. And you know, I love to play every instrument, and but mostly I've always been a singer, and I love to write songs. And I was very inspired by gospel music when I went to college. I was in the, you know, at Berkeley, we had a great gospel choir, and that really opened me up and brought me into a new world of music, which I didn't have growing up in a white suburb of Massachusetts. So, outside of the music that my dad had really showed to me. So, you know, through the years, it was definitely a lot of British rock, you know, where I grew up in high school and stuff. You know, everyone listened to the Stones and the Who, and everyone listened to Pink Floyd and bands like that. But people didn't know, you know, who Freddie King or Magic Sam was. So I didn't really know about those guys until I went to college and searched out some record stores on my own, and found people like Big Mama Thornton and Coco Taylor, and found people like Memphis Minnie and T-Bone Walker, and you know, I got this Magic Sam record, and it changed my life. I actually was like, that's it. I'm buying an electric guitar, and I'm going to learn how to play this thing, because I really love to sing and play. I love the idea of that. And, you know, to hear someone like Freddie King or Otis Rush or BB in their prime do what they do, you know, it brought me so much joy to realize that you could be almost like a gospel singer, but play this mad guitar like Jimi Hendrix, you know? So for me, I realized, wow, you know, I just really want to be like all those artists. You know, I want to be like Johnny Guitar Watson or Buddy Guy, you know, someone who can really, you know, show the roots of American roots music with all this energy, and then also have another voice on the guitar. So it's kind of where I'm coming from.
It's interesting. I mean, you've ticked just about every stylistic box there is, with I think the exception of hip hop, and I wonder whether it what you said is, I mean, is interesting to me, because perhaps you don't see the barriers that between the different styles. Maybe it's all much more fluid from your point of view, that there isn't blues over here and country over there.
Absolutely. You know, my father told me when he was going to see a lot of these artists, there wasn't a difference between blues and folk artists. So when he would go to the Newport Folk Festival, it was Mississippi John Hurt and Bob Dylan and people like that all in the same scene, you know. So they didn't actually have them in boxes back then. It was all just American roots music, and it was actually considered folk. You know, it really wasn't electric. It wasn't considered rock or pop or anything like that. So for me, you know, I really guess I don't see the boundaries, and I think that's why I've always had a hard time being put in a box. I don't really like it when they're like, oh, you're just a blues singer, or you're just, you know, this or that, you know, because for me, yeah, I love country music, I love gospel music, I love funk, I love soul, I love rock, I love, you know, so many forms of music that I don't like to limit myself. And now that I've been married to Derek for over 11 years, you know, I love so much more music, you know, everything from, you know, Indian classical to, you know, Nigerian funk music to, I mean, you name it, classical. You know, he's listening to Mahler these days, you know, all sorts of things. So, you know, it's great to keep an open mind in music.
Well, I look forward to the Mahlerian influence in your guitar solos. I guess they're just going to get longer, are they, Derek?
That's right. Longer and sadder.
You're listening to The Music Show on RN, and I'm talking to Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks of the Tedeschi Trucks Band. This band, it's a big band. I mean, there's 11 of you on the road. Is that right?
Absolutely right.
Do you really need that? I mean, I've heard your guitar playing. You don't need anybody else.
You know, there's something amazing about having that much firepower on stage. You know, I think we're still scratching the surface of what we can do with it. But you know, it is, especially this day and age where everything seems to be streamlining and downsizing and like squeezing profits from a rock. To take an 11-piece band on the road is it's pretty mad, but it's we love it. You know, I feel like just by showing up with that many people, the audience knows you mean business. They know you're there for one reason, and it's to, you know, storm the stage and play music and bring that. And I think there's something to it. I think it's more of a mindset at this point for us. It's, it lets people know where we're coming from and what it's about. You know, because we could certainly, me and Susan and a bass player and a drummer could go out four or even five piece, and I think on some levels the crowds would be the same, and the shows would be really good. But there's something about that extra level of you just never know where it's coming from. And with this band, everybody on stage inspires us, so it keeps us fresh and it keeps us young musically.
Does it also, in a funny sort of way, discipline you? I mean, because, you know, you could play guitar solos all night, presumably, but you can't if you've got all of these horn players and something. They have to do something too.
Absolutely, yeah. It definitely does that, you know. And I've, being a guitar player, I've strangely really avoid listening to guitar players. And I don't love guitar albums, and you know, there's exceptions, but for the most part, you know, I don't want to hear that. So I tend to try to intentionally limit myself, because, you know, I want to play music that if I was on the other side of it, that I would actually want to hear or want to follow or explore. So, you know, the last handful of records I've done with my group, and it's certainly with this group, it's kind of, you know, the solo has its place, and it's and there is a time where you want to explore and extend it, but you know, every song doesn't have to be that. It really should serve the song, serve the music.
Hmm.
And also, I kind of like the idea of bringing all these different musicians to the audience, because sometimes they don't even realize that they need, you know, such a nice diverse group of people. You know, it's, I don't know, it's sort of a weird analogy, but I was listening to the radio, and it's like whatever you're given, you know, is kind of what you can fall in love with. And people don't always realize it, but there's so much great talent out there. And to have all these talented guys in our band, you know, it's an honor for us to get to show them off, you know, because, you know, there's not always the right time and place to do it. And it's a great honor just to be in a band with so many talented people.
Just a word about the studio before we finish. I mean, this is in the great tradition of old Southern studios, Muscle Shoals and Stacks and so on. Is that the idea?
Absolutely. You know, and when I had the harebrained idea to do it, I ran it by Susan. I had just gotten the Clapton gig, and we sat down, and we have kids, and, you know, we're busy, and we're trying to make things work and juggle all the time. And but I told her, I was like, let's pretend this gig doesn't happen. We're going to live the exact same way we live now, but I want to build a studio. I want to build a place on our property that we can rehearse and not have to leave home. We can spend more time at home, work just as much, but just be home a little bit more. And just from that simple idea, it's turned into so much more. You know, now it's a world-class facility. And, you know, I didn't know who we had on our team. My guitar tech, Bobby Tees, turns out his father helped build Electric Lady Studios in Bearsville in New York, world-class studios. And him and his dad got together and drew up these blueprints and all these ideas that I would never thought of, just to make it, to make the studio right out of the gate. And then we bought this old Neve console,
which, by the way, he asked me if he could buy, and I was probably one of the few women that you could be married to that was like, yes, please buy that.
Can I buy this board that costs more than our house? Sure, honey, great idea. So we did that, and this board came out of Conk Studios, the Kinks studio in London. Just an amazing sounding piece of equipment. And over the years, every record we do, and we take whatever money the studio earns for studio time, and we just put it in equipment. So better microphones, better gear, and you know, we just have the studio kind of feed itself. And it's and at this point, it's I don't see any reason to ever have to go anywhere to record. If there's something we want to do, so it's a change of pace, maybe, but it's really starting to hone in on an actual sound. And you know, the band being able to rehearse in the place that you're going to record is a pretty amazing thing. Half our record was recorded when we thought we were rehearsing. It was just, we wrote a tune, and then the mic's already up and you track it and you go back and listen and you're like, that's that.
So you of course, so you get an element of spontaneity that you couldn't get otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, a lot of times the magic is really there when you're first discovering a song or you're first figuring out what it's supposed to mean or what it's supposed to say. And then, you know, if you have to wait 2 months or wait till the band gets back together and you're trying to recreate a feeling, it's a fleeting thing. So it's nice to be able to capture it.
Derek Trucks, Susan Tedeschi, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for joining me on The Music Show.
Thank you, man.
Thank you so much.